On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh Bass and Marcus Barrahall break down the heartbreaking loss to the Utah Jazz, Jarrett Allen's foul problems, and if it makes sense to trade him to another team. Coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back with another episode of the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Of course, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, rate us, review us, give us your feedback. I am your host, Josh Bass, heartbroken after another Brooklyn Nets loss to the Utah Jazz. We're recording it right after the game on Tuesday night, and joining me as always, my pick and roll partner, Marcus Barrahall. Hey, Marcus, what's up?
Josh, you know, would have liked this to have been immediately after a win. It almost was.
I know.
You know, here we are.
At least David Locke's happy.
That's true. Yeah, we can take solace in that.
Yeah, and if you want to hear a more upbeat podcast, I'm sure Locked On Jazz is going to have some good stuff. But it's a little dire here at Locked On Nets. The Nets got absolutely destroyed by the Suns on Sunday, 138-112. That there's really just nothing redeemable from that game. And this was coming after a really nice win at Portland. And then the Nets come in tonight against the Utah Jazz. Had a really nice first half. We're up by 15 at the break. And then the third quarter came, and Utah basically immediately got going. The Nets had a lot of sloppy turnovers, couldn't really get into a rhythm, missed shots, and the missed shots was a problem the whole night with 11 of 37 from three-point shooting, and Utah kind of had it within that 3-5 range for most of the game, and then made a push at the end when Kyrie Irving just couldn't hit some key shots. Nets really struggled to generate offense besides Joe Harris down the stretch, and then defensively couldn't really stop guys like Jeff Green, who is draining catch-and-shoot threes, and Emmanuel Mudiay, and then some big shots late from guys like Conley and Donovan Mitchell. Ultimately, Kyrie has a chance to hit the go-ahead shot at the end, misses on the three, and the Jazz close it out with free throws, and the Nets fall to 4-6 on the season.
Yeah, it felt like down the stretch especially that the Nets offense was just Joe Harris and Kyrie like alternating taking threes, with DeAndre Jordan like occasionally getting an offensive rebound and a putback. But for Utah, like you said, like they got contributions from those random guys like Jeff Green making three threes, Emmanuel Mudiay somehow putting the ball into the basket in an NBA game. So it was like everything sort of went right for the Jazz. They got a couple bounces too at the end, like with that missed free throw from Mike Conley, and even on the Kyrie miss, like Joe Harris was right there and it just kind of ricocheted off his hand. It felt like, other than the jump ball after the coach's challenge, the Nets didn't really get many breaks in this game, and that's kind of the way it's gone early this season.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it's that you make your own luck, but I just think the intensity wasn't there. Like, I'm confused why a guy like Dave Nwaba, who plays excellently in the first half, 5 minutes only, but really gives the Nets a spark with some of his defensive energy, had a couple of nice blocks, steals, getting in passing lanes, and then he just doesn't play at all in the second half. You'd think that that kind of spark would be necessary, and I'm not sure if you feel the same way, but the Nets offense this year has really been kind of your turn, my turn, and when you go down the stretch of this game, it's just Kyrie Irving out there is really the only guy that can create shots besides a little bit of Joe Harris, so he's just going to get tired naturally. I'm surprised that Kenny didn't bring Spencer Dinwiddie back, who, yep, his defensive effort was absolutely abysmal, and we can get into that. But offensively, I thought he did a really good job creating shots, and he would have been able to ease some of the pressure off of Kyrie and at least given the Jazz a different look to guard.
Yeah, and Kyrie and Joe were both like short on all their jumpers down the stretch. Like Joe Harris even had one that was maybe from like 11 feet that was pretty much wide open that he short-armed. Kyrie was short on that last three. And yeah, Dinwiddie, like you said, defensively is one thing, but offensively, he was getting the basket. It seemed like he was like playing really aggressively, but he only played 24 minutes. And I definitely thought that if nothing else, Kenny could have like brought him in for Kyrie with like maybe 7 minutes left and then took him back out with 5 minutes left, just to kind of give Kyrie a rest to recharge him for that final stretch, because it seemed like every time he brought the ball down in that last minute or two, he was just like completely out of breath.
Yeah, or at least play them together. I mean, right. In a game where Caris LeVert misses it with a sprained thumb, it's shocking to me that Dinwiddie only plays 24 minutes. And this wasn't like game like the Pistons last week. I mean, this is a game where Dinwiddie played pretty well, especially on the offensive end of things, being able to score 21 points, 7 of 16 shooting, did a nice job getting to the line, and had some moments where he was really just carrying the Nets. So I'm shocked that he only played as few minutes as he did. You'd have to think that he'd be above 30 for a game like this.
Yeah, it felt like he wasn't out there at all down the stretch, which he wasn't, so.
Yep, yeah. It would have felt weird if it felt like he was out there down the stretch.
Right, that, yeah, I guess that would be.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
And there has to be, I'm still mad about this Nwaba thing. There has to be some explanation for why he only got 5 minutes of burn. You know, Musa got run in both the first half and second half, and he had a couple nice plays in the first half, and his numbers looked nice, shot the ball 4 of 5 for 9 points and had a couple nice finishes, but ultimately wasn't super impressed with him. And I just think, you know, this Nets team right now, their offense, you know, the turnovers aren't great and the 3-point shooting can be hit or miss, and you need more creators, but ultimately in the aggregate, they have a very good offensive team. What you need is on defense, guys that can really get after it, create energy plays, force turnovers, and will really, especially on the perimeter, be able to dig into these guys like a Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell, like a Devin Booker and Ricky Rubio in the Phoenix game. And Nwaba is the only guy on this team right now that is showing a propensity for doing that. And Garrett Temple can do it here and there, and he had a really great play at the end of this game that was a successful challenge by Kenny Atkinson, stripping the ball from Mike Conley. But you need that more consistently. And if you bring in a Nwaba alongside a Spencer Dinwiddie, it's going to make it even more powerful, because Dinwiddie's a guy that's very adept at creating his own shot and doesn't love to pass, trust me. So, and Nwaba's not a guy that needs a lot of shots, but can really focus in on defense. And I think the Nets need to throw guys out there that can contribute and kind of balance them out on both ends, because right now it's a team where there's a lot of guys that are just mainly offensive players.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Like, the offense, we've said it over and over, like, as disjointed and, like, not aesthetically pleasing as it's looked at times this season, it's been really effective, and they've, like, been pretty much, like, one of the top offenses in the league. So that's not the problem at all. And like you said, that's kind of all Musa offers, and David Nwaba kind of is the exact opposite of that. And so it doesn't totally make sense as to why the guy who his skills would seem a little bit redundant, at least with the current iteration of the team, is getting more run than the guy whose skills kind of are exactly where the Nets' weaknesses are. So I definitely agree with that. And I also agree with Garrett Temple. I thought he stepped up. I thought he played really well in this game. So just wanted to shout him out.
Yeah, no, he's been really good this season. He's been a nice surprise, but ultimately, you know, we can hem and haw about some of these lineup decisions, but when you look at this Nets roster right now, it's just not that good, you know, and they should be better than where they are now. But you know, this is a team that I think we kind of overhyped the roster that they were going to have this year and kind of the wins that they could have, because they lost a ton of depth. And ultimately, we all love the Kevin Durant signing. I'm so thankful that he's a Net, but he's not going to play this year. So you have to look at the guys they have on the team this year, and it's a team with a lot of flawed players. You have a guy in Torian Prince who you bring in and hope that he's going to be able to contribute not only on offense, where he's a proven, really solid three-point shooter, but on defense as well, and he's just not going to be able to do that given his current skill set. So right now it's really a collection of a lot of spot-up shooters, and then Kyrie, and then a couple guys in Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert who have a lot of potential to be more well-rounded offensive players but are still inconsistent.
Yeah, I feel like other than Kyrie and Joe Harris, like, it's tough to trust anybody on this team to have, like, a good string of games, like, in a row. I guess Torian Prince is probably the closest, and Dinwiddie has seemed to have turned the ship around, at least from where he was at the start of the season. But, yeah, it's like you said, like, they don't really have, like, reliable, steady guys. Like, Ed Davis last year, he was never going to be, like, extraordinary, but you knew he was always going to come in and give you kind of that same performance. Similar with Jared Dudley, where he's not really going to kill you. Like, Damari Carroll also is, like, even if his shot's not falling, he can get to the line. Like, they all had things that they could kind of fall back on, and that's probably just partially being veteran players who have, like, been around for that long. It feels like if, like, Caris LeVert's shot isn't falling, then that pokes holes other in other spots in his game. If Dinwiddie's not getting his calls, that can take him out of the game. If Jared Allen isn't getting those little touch shots to go in, then that takes him out. DeAndre could just look completely washed in one night. He looked great tonight, but obviously he's been up and down. So, yeah, the whole roster outside, again, of Kyrie and Joe Harris, like, it seems like they're extremely, like, up and down.
Yeah, I know. I think that's a great point. Like, those guys were steady veterans. You know, Ed Davis wasn't going to get five offensive fouls in a game like Jared Allen does basically every night at this point. And I feel like those guys, those supporting players on the Nets right now, even there could be a time where Kyrie Irving has an incredible game, but just kind of the by lack of contributions from the role players, that wasn't it's going to lead the Nets to not getting that win. And we saw that when he had a 50-point game to open the season against the T-Wolves, Nets couldn't get that win ultimately. But last season, it was really saying the role players were going to be solid, steady Eddie, and it was saying, hey, can D'Angelo Russell and some of these upper echelon players step up? And now you have guys that can step up, albeit Kyrie had a tough game tonight, but now you have role players that can take you out of games with just abysmal performances, whether it be turnovers, defense, poor shooting, what have you.
Right. It's kind of the inverse of last year, where the bench is way less consistent than it was. Like, last year, it was basically that the starters would, like, try to play the other team's starters even, and then once the bench came in, that would be when they'd make their run. But it feels the opposite now, where they kind of have to build a lead because they're inevitably going to, like, give up a run at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Nets bench just really isn't good right now. And it's causing me a lot of stress, and I need to decompress with something outside of basketball. And what do I turn to? I turn to Audible. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment, including Audible Originals. Audible Originals are stories created exclusively for audio, including documentaries, exclusive audiobooks, and scripted shows that you can't hear anywhere else. Audible keeps you informed, inspired, entertained. You'll finish more stories when you listen with Audible and always be part of the conversation. And with the convenient Audible app, you can listen anytime, anywhere, and on any device, mobile, Alexa-enabled devices, Bluetooth, and more. Every month, if you're a member, you can choose one audiobook, regardless of price, as well as two Audible originals from a fresh selection. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA or text LOCKEDONNBA to 500-500. Obviously, do not listen to an Audible instead of this podcast, but more so in conjunction with it. Does Audible have anything, any sort of content which can explain why Jared Allen does not know how to set a legal screen?
It's a good question. He barely played in this game because of all the foul trouble, and that actually led to a lineup thing that I was, like, really intrigued by, which was Nick Claxton playing at the four, like, alongside DeAndre Jordan. I had been kind of wanting to see that, and it didn't go terribly. I don't know. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, no, it didn't go terribly, and I think that was kind of like a helter-skelter few minutes, but there's one play where Claxton got the ball on kind of like the semi-break and found a cutting Musa, who had a nice layup there. But I thought Claxton looked comfortable, you know? I think he definitely can guard the perimeter. The thing with the lineup with him at the four, it's like now you basically have two non-shooters out there, and it's going to make things really difficult for the guards because there's just not enough proper spacing. And it's not like Claxton's going to post up. So offensively, I just do think he is better suited as a five where he can be the role man with the floor spread. But defensively, I thought it looked pretty good. And obviously, the fours that the Jazz have aren't really going to be dynamic guys that are going to take you off the dribble. But he looked comfortable out there, and that's really all you can ask for.
Yeah, for sure. And I keep thinking, because he's, like, so tall and skinny, and he is a lefty and whatnot, I keep seeing, like, flashes of Chris Bosh. Not that he's, like, anywhere as good, but, you know.
Hopefully one day.
Yeah. I'm a big Nick Claxton guy.
Yeah, no, I really like him. I think I was kind of I was down on the pick, and really kind of talking him, as I think a lot of people were talking him up in kind of training camp, summer league, and I was like, okay, let's hold the brakes a little bit. Like, this guy was an okay player in the SEC, probably nothing to write home about, but he definitely has shown flashes, and another solid pick by Sean Marks. So excited to see what he can bring, and just given all the foul trouble that Allen has, you know, it's definitely possible that he's going to get increased minutes should DeAndre Jordan go down. What do you think about Allen right now? Because in terms of his long-term outlook on the team, I've definitely kind of just been frustrated by his lack of improvement. And obviously, the last two games, he's fouled 11 times in 30 minutes and just looks kind of lost out there. And his lack of touch around the rim and his struggle to finish those shots that aren't just like wide open dunks or layups definitely is a cause for concern for this Nets team right now.
Yeah, for sure. And the fouling is it's interesting because I feel like that's kind of the area where he has been the most consistent, like the last year and a half that I've been watching him more closely. Just like on the interior defensively, he's like been really good. And this first, or at least like the last week or so, he's kind of not given up a ton, but he's like, I don't know. He just doesn't look quite the same on that end. And then the offense, like you said, has never been like his strong suit, and he doesn't have the best hands, and he struggles to rebound effectively and whatnot. But yeah, it seems like he doesn't really have a strength right now, and he's just kind of out there. Like DeAndre Jordan did a really good job, I thought, with Rudy Gobert, especially on the offensive glass and just kind of punishing him and making him like have to really box out and whatnot. And I did not really see that from Jared Allen. And Nick Claxton even is like giving more energy than Allen has. So it feels like DeAndre has more of like the like knowing where to be and that kind of thing. And Claxton has more of like the energy and the hustle plays that Allen had like even last year and the year before. And Jarrett kind of seems like he's maybe second in both of those areas. And he's like, I don't know, he feels like a man without a calling right now. Although he did that, he had that nice block on Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, but, you know. I mean, that's his thing. He'll just like stand back to the rim and use his long wingspan and block shots. But like anything else, he's just not, he's not doing it for the Nets right now. It's a complete lack of intensity, lack of awareness, just like guarding anything besides help defense. Like I think his one-on-one defense is really terrible. Offensively, he can't finish anything. Hands of stone. As you mentioned, I think Jordan completely outplayed him tonight. And then also the Phoenix game, I know you can't take a ton from a blowout, but when it was somewhat competitive in kind of the late first quarter, early second, I do think DeAndre Jordan looked more active. And it's like, Jared Allen, dude, if you're setting an illegal screen, they're calling it, don't keep doing it. You have to learn from your mistakes. These are just things that are going to get you, like, have you lose control. And even if you do stay in the game, like we saw tonight, if you're playing with five fouls, you're going to play more tentatively, and you're not going to be able to make as much of an impact. So it's going to affect you, obviously, but you're not playing as much. And also when you're on the court, it's going to reduce the effectiveness of your play. So like these are just easy things that you can't be doing. You can't be using your off arm to just like shield defenders away. You can't be like going out of your way to do these illegal screens, especially a couple games in a row. It's going to become something that all the refs in the league start to notice and keep an eye out on. And the coaches of these opposing teams will say before the game, hey, watch out for Allen on these moving picks. And then you're going to start picking up with more frequency, even if you cognizantly try to reduce it. So it's just a habit that you don't want to create. And I feel like in his third season now, Jared Allen has to know that he can't be picking up these cheap fouls because he's supposed to be such an important part of this Nets team. And given that they have horrible perimeter defense as is, they really do need someone back there that can be a very solid last line of defense.
Yeah, and this is maybe like a larger conversation that we can get into like on another podcast, but what do you think about the possibility of the Nets like looking to trade him, like, and making DeAndre Jordan the starter and Nick Claxton the bench guy in an effort to try to get maybe more perimeter defense or maybe more help with the four? Because I feel like Jared Allen's reputation is still very high, and like I got a push notification from the NBA app during this game that was like, Jared Allen meets Rudy Gobert at the rim, adds another star to his list of victims. And I feel like for most fans and most teams, like, those are the plays that they see, are those big highlight blocks, and they don't see the things that like you and I and the listeners see game in, game out, where it's like 25 minutes of missed floaters and bobbled passes and like cheap fouls, and they see like the 5 minutes of like big dunks and big blocks and things like that. I feel like he's a player who his reputation probably outpaces where he actually is on the court.
Yeah, no, I completely think it makes sense for the Nets to maybe towards the deadline evaluate what it could be like to trade him, especially because going into next season, he's probably going to be wanting a contract extension before the deadline ends in October. And I don't think it makes sense for the Nets to deploy that capital to give him that extension. So it's like, is he making as much of a difference now, or is it saying, hey, we're keeping him around because of his potential and seeing what he can grow into? But ultimately, this Nets team window, really, the clock starts ticking next year with KD and Kyrie. That's when things get serious, and you have to figure out who is going to be a best fit alongside them. So I completely agree with you. I think his reputation is really good around the league right now. The stupid kind of like star counter thing of like how many guys stars he's blocked, like that's completely ridiculous and like I think so dumb. But if you can get a guy on the wing that you think can be a difference maker, I definitely think you have to do it. I don't know if that's someone. I just don't know what his value is going to be like because the center position is pretty saturated. But like, is like OG Anunoby or someone like that kind of a fair approximation of value for what they could get? Someone say, hey, Toronto, you kind of need a center of the future type. It makes sense for us to take back OG, who might be, you guys have a ton of wings already, and Pascal's your main guy, and he would fit in great with the Nets. And then next year, once KD's back, yeah, obviously it's not going to be a first option or even a second option, but he's someone that you can play kind of at the small ball five position down the stretch. So between him, DeAndre, if you're high on Claxton, that could be enough to piece things together.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I love OG. I think that the Nets would probably want a little bit more back just because Jared Allen's definitely like proven it more, especially health-wise. But yeah, I think that like something along those lines, I don't know the exact guy necessarily, but I think that the Nets
give
should
me
at
a
least
name.
Be... I thought of this just now. I think that the Nets should at least be open to that sort of thing.
Yeah, now I'm just going to be thinking of all the guys they could trade for. Yeah, I think they have to be open to making any sort of trade, whether it's Jared Allen, LeVert, Dinwiddie, whomever. Like, you have to think about the lineup and roster that's going to optimize Kyrie and KD the most efficiently over these next 2 years. And it could very well be saying, hey, we're already spending like $14 million a year on DeAndre Jordan, which is obviously he's nowhere near worth it. His friendship to Kyrie and KD is worth a lot more than his on-court play. But it might not make sense to kind of shift more resources into the center position and say, we really need it to beef up our wing talent. Or the Nets could say, hey, we think when KD's back next year, if he's back at close to full strength, 90% or whatever, we think with him there, our perimeter defense is going to really improve, and we're not going to have to play some of these more one-dimensional guys like a Torian Prince, and it'll allow us to specialize a bit more alongside Kyrie and KD, whether that be Temple or Nwaba or similar type players. So it's frustrating because obviously as fans, we root for this team inside and out for these 82 games this year, but ultimately Sean Marks and the guys in the Nets front office will be kind of playing for the long game because obviously that's what matters a lot more starting next year when Kevin Durant is back on this team.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely tough to like build for like future years, but also still worry about the like on-court product this year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's why, listen, man, I told you I'm going to be listening to a lot more Audible over this season while the Nets lose. It's going to allow me to decompress, and of course has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. So nothing more that I can ask for there. Just some more Nets wins. We'll be back in your ears, I believe, next day or two, kind of breaking down further what is causing these struggles to start the season, maybe recalibrating our expectations for the rest of this year, and also talk about this story that broke today with David Levy out as Nets CEO, of Barclays Center just after a very short 2-month stint. But until then, Please remember to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us. We love to hear your feedback. And follow us on social, on Twitter. I am at jmbass_Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. And the podcast account is at Locked On Nets. So Marcus, until next time, I'll speak to you soon.
Bye.